You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Man, y'all, I'm excited, man. I'm going to tell y'all why I'm excited, because spring is here. We're finally getting some really good weather outside, man. It's been beautiful. Last couple days, I guess it's been a little chillier than normal, but man, last weekend it was great outside. This week the weather has been really nice, aside from what was it, a thunderstorm on I want to say that was like Wednesday, but other than that, man, weather is looking beautiful. I'm excited, man. We can start to bring out some different clothes and get out and enjoy the sun. I feel like it's been a while, obviously, since we were last on the air, but crazy things are happening in the sports world, man. We got men's Final Four going on, women's Final Four. We had baseball opening day happen, and now we're about six or seven games in to the baseball season. We got the NBA that's winding down to playoff time. We got the NFL draft that's right around the corner. Can't wait to jump in, man, and discuss that, and a big trade that happened over this past week, just the other day. So, look, I'm excited to jump in and discuss those topics. But before I get to that, man, I wonder if y'all have been tuned in to what's happening in the rap world right now, man. There's a little beef that's going on between, looks like, you got Metro Boomin, Future against and Kendrick Lamar against Drake and J. Cole, and you know, it's a lot of other people against Drake, obviously, because that's the cool thing to do, is what everybody feels. Cool thing to do is to hate on Drake. Y'all know Drake is my guy. That's my favorite artist right there. But yeah, man, it's some crazy stuff going on right now. You obviously had Kendrick put his verse on that Future and Metro Boomin track called Like That, where he was pretty much saying there's not a big three, it's just him. I'm not gonna repeat what he said on the air, but y'all know what I'm talking about if you've heard it. I'm pretty sure you have. And then we just had J. Cole drop a surprise album last night, man, and he addressed Kendrick Lamar really throughout the album with a few with some verses here or there, with some lines here or there, I should say. But 7 Minute Drill, the last song on the album, is where he specifically addressed him, you know, throughout the entirety of the song. So yeah, man, it's great to hear J. Cole back in the booth, man. Excited. I was able to really, I listened to that whole J. Cole album last night, man. I don't know about y'all, but J. Cole, that's one of my goats right there. One of the best lyricists that we have. So Kendrick, you better watch out, bro, because if you really want beef, J. Cole's pen is something serious, man. I'm trying to tell you. And people really, really kill me, man, because they were acting like J. Cole's diss back to Kendrick was basic. I mean, I've seen a lot of people out here saying that this is basic, but they were literally on Twitter after Kendrick said, there's no big three, it's just big me. And they were losing their minds. I'm like, what is wrong with y'all? Like, are y'all for real? That was the most basic bar that I've ever heard, and people were losing their minds, and they have the nerve to say that J. Cole's response is basic? Like, I don't really know what people are listening to out there, but if you're a Cole fan and you're really listening to what he's saying, Cole was spitting, and Cole has always been one of the best. So, I don't know, man. To each his own, you're entitled to your own opinion, but I just don't know what y'all are listening to. but yeah, man, I'm excited to see, you know, if Kendrick is going to come back, and if Cole, you know, will come back at that, there'll be some back and forth. And then wondering if, you know, if Drake will throw in a response to what was said about him too. So who knows, man? But all in all, it's good for rap. A lot of people don't even really think this is real anyway. So we'll see, man. We don't really know what's real and what's not. But right now, it's fun to, you know, engage in the whole, you know, rap beef to get some more excitement back in hip hop because, you know, to be truly honest, man, it's the stuff that's being released today, man. It's not really any originality or variety. A lot of the stuff I can't even listen to, man. So it's good to hear some artists that can actually rap battling it out. So but said all of that to say, man, let's get into that sports talk. I just had to, you know, speak on that topic. I know, you know, obviously this is a sports talk show, but I like to talk about different stuff from time to time. Y'all have to excuse me. I love to talk, love to discuss what's hot and what's new that's going on right now. And that's a hot topic. So, but yeah, man, let's kick it into this sports talk, man. Like I said, we got the final four matchups that are set. Excited about this, man. Let's talk about the men's final four and then we're going to discuss the women's final four. Well, actually, you know what? No, let me switch that up. I'm going to talk about the women's final four first because their matchups are actually happening tonight. So want to go ahead and dive into that because the men's final four is on Saturday. So let's discuss the women's final four first. So we have the matchups are as follows. You got number one South Carolina versus number three NC State. And then you have number one Iowa versus number three UConn, man. Some great matchups that we have in store for us this tonight. So what I want to do is run down the keys to victory for each of these teams in the women's final four. And then I'll give my prediction on who I think is going to end up in the national championship game for the women and the men later on in the show. So let's talk about keys to victory. So first and foremost, again, like I said, South Carolina, number one South Carolina, number three NC State, they're actually tipping off at 7 p.m. tonight on ESPN. South Carolina is an 11.5-point favorite, so a pretty convincing favorite in this one. So the keys to victory for South Carolina. So for me, I say you feed Camila Cardoso. I mean, she's averaging 14-9 on the year. You got to win the rebound battle. They've out-rebounded South Carolina. They've out-rebounded every team they played in the tournament so far, which is not a surprise if you've actually watched them play. They actually had 44 points in the paint versus Oregon State in their last game. So that's obviously going to be a huge focus. Rebounding Camila Cardoso down there in the paint is one that can really crash the board. So I'm looking to see, you know, if there's going to be a performance similar to like they had at Oregon State where they had 44 points in the paint. Could they even get more in the paint? So we'll see about that. Another key to victory for me is, you know, Malaysia Fawali. I think she's an X factor, man. If you actually watch the SEC championship game against LSU, Malaysia Fawali, man, she came out and she was on fire. I mean, being able to come off the bench like that and bring that spark, that electricity that you might need, even if you might be going through a little drought scoring and having Phil Wiley come off the bench to bring that spark back, that would be huge. She's showed up, you know, time and time again. 20 points off the bench and 9 rebounds versus North Carolina. So again, she has an opportunity to really, really help South Carolina if they do indeed have any, you know, scoring struggles, which I don't see that happening at all. But I'm just saying, man, watch out for Malaysia Fawali off the bench, X factor to pay attention to. And last but not least, man, I think you just take advantage of your fast break opportunities. If you watch South Carolina, you know that they're a team. They like to get out. They like to run. They're really good in the open court and fast break. So they very rarely don't convert fast break points. I mean, fast breaks into points. So, yeah, I mean, Those are my keys to victory for South Carolina. Let's switch to NC State. So keys to victory for NC State. I think you gotta obviously keep the ball in Isaiah James's hands. I hope I'm saying that right. So excuse me if I'm not. Isaiah James's hands. That's the one who you want to be your facilitator. She has a great feel for the game. Actually made 7 threes versus Texas, and had 27 points. So that's going to be a big, big factor for them, is if she can really get hot and knock down those perimeter shots. Cardoso, like I just mentioned before, she's a matchup nightmare. So they must stay out of foul trouble, and they have to rebound better. Simply because North Carolina State, I mean, they were out-rebounded by Texas 44-31, and they actually gave up 44 points in the paint, which, like I just said before, in the flip side, South Carolina was able to out-rebound their last opponent, and they put up 44 points in the paint. So, again, rebound is going to be important for NC State if they want to increase their chances of trying to advance to the national championship. And then they just got to find a way to outshoot South Carolina. I mean, South Carolina, they just click on all cylinders. I mean, they have it all figured out. I mean, they play with such, I don't know, man. It's one of those things where they're so smooth with the way they play. They're so disciplined with the way they play. So there's not a lot of flaws in their game, in that team. So you really have to just go out there and snatch it and take it away from them. So that's what NC State is going to have to do. So let's shift gears and talk about number one Iowa and number three UConn. So they tip off at 9 p.m. tonight on ESPN, right after that first matchup. Iowa is actually a 2.5-point favorite in this one. So keys to victory for Iowa is simple. Caitlin Clark. I mean, she had 41 points, 12 assists, hit 9 threes against LSU. She's going to be able to be the one to control the pace of the game for Iowa. You know, they like to get out and get the ball in Caitlin's hands. She's usually pretty quick up the court with making decisions. She'll come up. She can dish a really nice pass, really can throw a pass from anywhere. I mean, we've seen her throw cross-court passes. She's throwing the ball like a quarterback is throwing it to a wide receiver down the court. She has a really good ability to find the open shooter, the open cutter. And she really can knock down any shot from anywhere. So she is that Steph Curry of the women's college basketball. So you have to respect the distance that she can shoot from. And she is, one of those players that's very quick. You know, her first step is really, really quick. And you got to be able to keep up with her. So, but Iowa will... outside of me just making it as simple as saying just Caitlin Clark, there's more to it, because Iowa is not just going to solely be able to rely on Caitlin Clark. They do have to do a better job of rebounding the ball. They were out-rebounded 54-36 against LSU. And the issue with LSU was LSU, despite out-rebounding them, they just weren't able to take advantage of their second chance points later in that game, and there's a lot of wasted possessions for LSU. So they allowed Iowa to stay in the game with the lack of second chance points, and then they allowed Iowa to really go on a run, and the game really kind of got away from them from there. But Iowa in that game against LSU, they only had 6 offensive rebounds. So second chance points are going to be important. I don't think you can only have 6 offensive rebounds against UConn, you know, and just think you can advance to the national championship. So it's going to be a collective effort. So again, rebounding is going to be huge, because I don't think that they'll be able to get away with simply just 6 offensive rebounds. I mean, you got to be able to rebound the ball. UConn keys to victory. Paige Beckers, being the scorer and the facilitator that we know that she is, we know, and let's not forget, she missed all of last season. I think some of the season prior to that. So almost like two. I want to say she almost missed two seasons. But before that, man, Paige Bueckers, I mean, she was lighting up, and she still is. I mean, she showed that in the last matchup against USC. 28 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists. So Paige Bueckers is really another player that, similar to Caitlin Clark, can control the pace for UConn. And really, if she can have a similar game like she did against USC, that will put them in a really good position to be able to try to knock off Iowa. And I don't think that she necessarily has to go out there and try to score 40 like Caitlin Clark, but if she just plays her game and allows everything else to fall into place and come to her, and take advantage of what's in front of them, then we'll have a game that's going down to the wire late in the fourth quarter. Now they do need a big game from Aaliyah Edwards. She averages 17 points and 9 rebounds on the year, and actually had 24 points against USC. So if they can get a huge game, a big game from her, that would help their case as well. And last two things: don't try to get into a 3-point shootout with Iowa. I think that that's where a lot of teams fall victim to Iowa, and they get in trouble. Is they want to run and gun, they want to shoot 3 for 3 with them. Don't get into the habit of trying to turn this into a shootout. Take advantage of every possession. Take smart shots. We saw LSU in that matchup against Iowa. They did not always take the smartest shots and didn't take advantage of the possessions that they had, because they had ample opportunities to take the lead in that game, really, 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 really go on a run, but they just couldn't cash in and could not take advantage of their opportunities. So that's going to be huge for UConn, because the opportunities are going to be there. They need to, and last but not least, I think that the key is if they can get pressure, Caitlin Clark, get in her face, force the ball out of her hands, and just be disciplined. That'll help them pretty much weather the storm, because Caitlin is going to get hers, but I don't think that it's smart to just sit back and let her run off ball screens, catch and shoot. Like, you're just not going to be able to do that and be able to beat them. So, yeah, those are my keys to victory for both of those matchups with the women's Final Four. So let's shift now and talk men's Final Four. So we have on Saturday, number 1 Purdue versus number 11 NC State. That one is tipping off at 6:09 on TBS. Purdue is a 9.5-point favorite in this one. So keys to victory for Purdue. It's simple. Get the ball inside to Zach Edey. I mean, the offense obviously runs through him anyway. In the last four games, Edey has put up 30 points, 21 rebounds, 23 points, 14 rebounds, 27 points, 14 rebounds, and 40 points, 16 rebounds in the most recent matchup. Edey leads team in points, rebounds, and blocks. So it is, despite just getting the ball down in the Edey, it is going to take more than that. Just similar to what I was just talking about with the women's Final Four matchups, it's going to have to be more than just Edey to beat NC State. I mean, multiple starters, I feel like, will have to have solid games. Edey just can't be the one to put up 40 and think that they're going to just knock NC State off. NC State is a team that's resilient. They fight. They're gritty. We saw them get down on Duke. I think they were at one point down by double digits against Duke. They were able to battle back, kept fighting, and that's the type of team that, if you're Purdue, you want to be cognizant of that and know that it's going to take everyone. Edey is not going to be able to beat NC State just by himself. Mark my words. It's not just going to be able to dump it down low and call it a night, because I'm pretty sure they're gonna. I mean, Edey is a scorer. I mean, he's 7'4". He's gonna get his, but at some point, he's not gonna make that easy hook shot, or when he catches it on a block, they'll be crowding him in the lane, and he's going to have to dish it back out. So somebody's going to have to be able to hit open shots. So, yeah, we'll see what happens there. And the keys to victory for NC State, I think you feed DJ Burns Jr., get Edie into early foul trouble. DJ Burns is the modern-day Zach Randolph. I've seen people call him Gen Zebo on Twitter, which made me die laughing, man, because he plays just like Zach Randolph. I mean, he's stocky. He's 6'9". I mean, he is a matchup, you know, nightmare just because of the way that he can move with his being the size that he is and being able to move like he can. It's going to be important for Edie to be able to move his feet and pretty much be stay disciplined on the defensive end, because DJ Burns can draw fouls as well. So if you get Edie into early foul trouble, if he's in the first half with two quick fouls early in this game, ends up with three fouls in that first half, then you know you got them right where you want them, because then he's going to play more lax. He's not going to be as aggressive on the defensive side. And if he is, he's going to run the risk of fouling out of the game with just, you know, two more fouls to go before he has to sit down. So with Burns being physical, I think that he could cause that to be a matchup problem for Edie. In Burns' last game, he had 29 points. He has a really good ability. He plays with it. With his back to the basket, he has a really good hook shot. He can knock down short jumpers from the paint. I've seen him hit a couple of 15-footers. He really has a nice inside game. Ball movement is going to be very important also for NC State in this matchup. They did a really good job against Duke moving the ball and being able to knock down shots when the opportunities present itself. But that drive and kick and being able to create open shots is going to be important, and then knocking down those shots. So yeah, those are my keys for both of those teams. And then last but not least, man, let's talk about the game that I'm locked in on. I'm locked in on all the games, but I'm really, really locked in on this one. And if you don't know why I'm locked in on this one, you haven't been paying attention, man. My Alabama Crimson Tide going up against number one UConn, man. First Final Four appearance in school history for Alabama, man. As an Alabama alumni, I am so excited about this, man. Just seeing how this program has turned around from when I was in school, when we had like Jermichael Green and those guys and Trevor Rutherford and all those guys, and seeing where we are now, having a first Final Four appearance, man, it's special. It's very special, and I'm excited about this one. But, again, number one UConn, number four Alabama, tip off at 8:49 p.m. on TBS. UConn is an 11.5-point favorite in this one. Pretty convincing favorite. Nobody's giving Alabama a shot outside of Alabama fans. UConn's keys to victory in this one: get the ball inside to Donovan Clinigan. You know, get Alabama in foul trouble. Obviously, a lot of people had a lot to say about Bama's defense, because they struggled defensively toward that throughout the year, and that back really that last half of the year, those final because they were 1-3 in March, so those final few games and the games leading into the SEC tournament, they really, really struggled defensively. So I think that, you know, the fact that UConn had 52 points in the paint versus Illinois, they're going to try to replicate that. Obviously, they're going to get the ball down to Clinigan. They're going to attack the paint. They're going to try to be aggressive and try to go on these big runs. I think that's another key to victory for them, to go on these long, extensive runs. Went on a 30-0 run versus Illinois. Now, what is going to be key for them is to be able to hit perimeter shots. They're only 17% from three in their last game. So they're going to have to do a better job of knocking down perimeter shots, because the games that we've seen, UConn struggle and lose, they weren't shooting the best. So Tristan Newton, that's another key to victory. He's gonna have to be more involved. 0-6 and only 5 points their last game. That's not gonna cut it against Alabama. If you ask me, I think that, you know, he's gonna have to have more of a presence offensively. And those are my keys to victory for UConn. And for Alabama, man, keys to victory: speed up the pace of this game, dictate the pace of the game, play tough, smart, disciplined defense. We saw over these last couple of games, Alabama's really tightened up defensively, and has really been smart, you know, on a defensive end. I mean, they stay aggressive. They have played without fouling in critical moments. So they have gotten better in the tournament at the right time. You also want to get Klinigan to guard outside of the paint, right? So force him into foul trouble. Match him up with Grant Nelson. If you can get Klinigan on the outside, trying to match up against Nelson, a guy who has the ability to dribble and can drive, you can possibly get Grant Nelson into foul trouble, right? And that's what you want. You want him away from the paint. And then when you get Klanagan away from the paint, you want to attack the paint when the lanes are open, right? So being able to drive, penetrate, and kick out for open threes is going to be another key to victory. Ball movement is going to be important. And knocking down your threes at a high percentage, right? Alabama is shot 44% from three versus Clemson, 42% from three versus North Carolina. If they can shoot 40 plus percent from three, they are putting themselves in a great spot to be able to beat and upset UConn. Now, like I mentioned just a second ago, all three games that UConn has lost this year, right? They were outscored from three by a wide margin. And if you don't believe me, check this out. So, the loss against Creighton, UConn shot 18% from three to Creighton's 50%, excuse me. In the loss against Seton Hall, UConn shot 19% to Seton Hall's 37% from three. In the loss against Kansas, UConn 39% from three, Kansas 64% from three. Now, it's almost impossible to beat somebody. They're shooting 64% from three. Well, I'm not saying it's impossible, but that it makes it really, really hard. But if Alabama is able to shoot 50% or higher from three, man, that would be huge. Especially because Sears has been on fire in the tournament so far. So, yeah, man. I mean, those are my keys to victory for Alabama, and just again excited to be able to lock in and watch these matchups this weekend. So let's move on, man. We talked NCAA men and women's tournament. Let's talk about the NFL draft. So Caleb Williams is set to be the number one pick for the Chicago Bears. I know y'all, I haven't been on since Justin Fields was traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And maybe that's the reason why I haven't been on here in a while, man. I'm still trying to process it. No, I'm just joking, man. It was hard, you know, when I got that notification. I was like, dang, man, because y'all heard me get on here and say that, you know, the Bears weren't going to trade Justin Fields. I truly believe that they weren't going to move on from him. I thought that, you know, they would try to, you know, build around him, trade that pick. But I understand this move. For multiple reasons. Number one, Ryan Poles did not draft Justin Fields, right? Ryan Poles came in and inherited a pick that Ryan Pace made, right? So you already sit in a situation where it's like this wasn't his guy that he had picked. If you decide to stay with Justin Fields and it does not work, then you're running the risk of losing your job. If you do stay up with Justin Fields and he ends up playing and improving even more, then you're having to pay him $50 million. So it was more so of a business move and job security, right? You reset everything with Caleb Williams. He's on a rookie contract, and you're able to build around him. And a lot of people are asking, you know, how well has the front office done with setting Caleb Williams up for success? And I think they've done an exceptional job, right? Let's look at what the Bears have done before even drafting Caleb Williams. You bring in DeAndre Swift, a running back who had his best year statistically, his breakout year, over 1,000 yards rushing in Philadelphia. So you bring in DeAndre Swift, you bring in Gerald Everett, one of a top tight end in the NFL, to pair him alongside Cole Kmet, especially because Shane Waldron loves to run two tight end sets. So that's going to be huge. And with Gerald Everett's ability to catch the ball and have yards after the catch is going to be huge. And then you bring in and you trade for Keenan Allen, one of the best route runners in the league. You put him alongside DJ Moore, matchup nightmares across the board on the offensive side. You improve the offensive line. They're above average right now. Maybe looking to add another piece or two to that offensive line. And then the only hole that's left is really the edge, I feel. Edge, they need another edge rusher. And really another, just in my opinion, maybe another wide receiver. So look at everything that they've done even before they drafted Caleb Williams, right? And this is arguably what people are saying is the best situation a rookie quarterback has ever walked into in NFL history. There's a lot of people that are arguing that right now, and I don't disagree. I mean, look at him being able to come in and have reliable guys to throw the football to, right? That's not, you don't see that. Right, you typically see a rookie quarterback drafted into a situation where he's there and really nobody to really throw the ball to, and it kind of destroys their confidence, right? Caleb Williams is not a guy that has, you know, a problem with confidence. He's very confident in himself. But looking at, you know, him being able to step in and look at his situation compared to Bryce Young's, right? I love Bryce, but Bryce came in, no offensive line, nobody to throw the ball to. His best offensive weapon was Adam Thielen, and he's in his, you know, mid-30s. So it's like, you know, they're having to start over, but the Bears are not in a situation where they're starting over. We're in a situation where we're trying to win now, right? And you take Caleb Williams with the number one pick, and then you also have, let's not forget, a number nine pick in the draft, right? So withholding that number nine and pick in the draft, a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, they could trade up, they could trade back and get more draft capital, or they could stay put. I think you stay put. You stay put at number nine. You take the best player available, right? A lot of people are having, you got four quarterbacks that are going in the first four picks. So you look at the situation now. After those picks, you got Marvin Harrison Jr. probably going after that. Malik Nabers going after that. Dallas Turner going up there. Maybe an offensive lineman somewhere up in that top eight range. Maybe drafted. And then you got Rome Odunze, one of the best route runners out of these three, out of these wide receivers in this draft, and arguably the best route runner. He could fall to nine. And if Rome Odunze is sitting there at number nine, imagine Rome Odunze, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, plus Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett, DeAndre Swift, Khalil Herbert, and Roschon Johnson in the backfield. Come on, man. Come on now. Bears fans, if you listen, y'all feel it now. Come on. I mean, that is a scary offense, man. That is scary. I mean, long gone are the days of only putting up 17 to 20 points and trying to win a football game. Now we're looking at, we're trying to put up 30 plus a game. Like, imagine that. And if you don't go wide receiver, you got Joe Alt is another guy that a lot of people are talking about there, or Jarrett Verse. But I personally, you know, I would love Rome Odunze in Chicago. He's actually on a top 30 visit right now. Caleb Williams has already had his top 30 visit and has had dinner with the team, members of the team. He's had dinner with, Matt Eberflus, head coach, and Ryan Poles a few times. So, you know, things are all set in stone and pretty much, it's apparent. Everybody knows where Caleb Williams is going, and it's going to be in Chicago. So get ready for the Caleb Williams era. But, yeah, I'm excited, man. This is an exciting time to be a Bears fan. And, again, if you're, you know, sitting at number 9, you can either go wide receiver, edge, or offensive lineman. Wouldn't be mad at either one of those because you're improving the team. Now, I know they only have 4 picks in this draft right now currently, but you can really utilize some of your with no second-round pick right now, right? So you can really utilize some of your 2025 draft capital to maybe trade into the second round and have an opportunity to land some more talent, right? Because I highly doubt Poles is probably going to leave this draft with just 4 picks. So I'm envisioning and assuming that he'll use some of the picks for 2025 to probably try to make a move into the second round and get a couple more players. So, again, exciting time to be a Bears fan. I'm excited. You should be too. The future is bright, y'all. So I am elated right now. Let's move on, man. Let's talk about a trade that happened this week too, man. A huge, huge trade. I'm talking about Stephon Diggs being traded to the Houston Texans. Man, this was wild, right? The Bills traded Diggs to the Texans for a 2025 second round pick. Now, Diggs was the most important player to Josh Allen during his tenure in Buffalo, right? And if you don't believe me, check this out. I mean, he led the NFL with 445 receptions last year and finished top 4 in receiving yards with 5,372 and touchdowns with 37. And now the 4-time Pro Bowler is taking his talents to Houston, man. Huge weapon for C.J. Stroud. And you look at who he already has, Tank Dell and Nico Collins. So this is going to be a great offense, man. I mean, it's going to be electric. Diggs clearly wanted out of Buffalo. They couldn't get over the hump and get to the Super Bowl. They were in perfect position years ago in the AFC Championship game against Kansas City. On the road and just couldn't get it done. Had an opportunity to knock off Kansas City in this last year. Just couldn't get it done. So you knew that Diggs was going to want out. So here we are. For me, the Texans, they're the clear favorite to win the AFC South, man. I think it's locked. I think the Texans are a lock, man. Assuming everybody stays healthy, man, they're a lock. So, yeah, it's scary hours in Houston, man. That's and Houston is a great market. I mean, everybody is wanting to go play in Houston now. I mean, I think that, you know, looking at what Houston did last year, they really attracted, you know, a lot of these guys that were heading into free agency. They're like, look, I need to check into Houston. And then you talk about Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon is another player that is a Houston Texan as well. They're dangerous. The Texans are 100% a dangerous team, man. They could very well be in the AFC Championship game this upcoming season. There was one more thing I wanted to add to this conversation. I think that, you know, looking at the Bills, who also traded away Gabe Davis, man, it's like they're blowing everything up, you know. So they're going to have to go after at least 2 wide receivers in this draft if they don't try to make a move in free agency. I know that, you know, T. Higgins is a guy that's out there that the Bengals were looking to trade. Well, then, yeah, he requested a trade. I wouldn't say they're looking to trade him, but he requested a trade from the Bengals. So do the Bills turn their eyes towards T. Higgins and try to get one guy in free agency? So we'll see what happens there, but they're definitely going to have to address that. And, you know, hey, we will see. But I know some Bills fans out there might be going through it right now, because Diggs was – that's a huge, huge loss. But now let's talk about, last but not least, my predictions for women's and men's national championship. So who will advance to the championship games for each? So let's start with the women first. So my prediction for the national championship for the women, I'm going to go with number one South Carolina versus number one Iowa for a rematch. Many of you know, last year Iowa stopped South Carolina in their hopes to get to the national championship. So I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing a rematch of that, so South Carolina can get that revenge. So this would be a great matchup for a national championship game. That is who I'm rolling with. And then for the men, I'm going to go with number four Alabama against number 11 NC State, man. I say two number ones get upset and you get a Bama NC State national championship. I think that this would be a great matchup. Two big underdogs, two teams that people, you know, wrote off, didn't even say that they would even get this far. What great matchup it would be to see these two teams go at it. And I'm hoping and praying that we get to see it. I really am, y'all. If Alabama is able to get to the national championship, man, that would be special. That would be special. So prayers up for that, hopefully. but yeah, those are my predictions. And feel free to let me know yours as well. I'm actually doing pretty good in my bracket right now, because Alabama's still alive. So my bracket is still pretty good. I'm at 82%, and I'm in eighth place in one of my groups. So we'll see what happens. If Bama ends up winning, I actually will get probably move all the way up to one, depending on how the point structure works. But nobody had Alabama in my group brackets, so I'm the only person that had them. So, but yeah, man, I'm excited. To lock in and watch these games. But that's all I have for y'all, man. I appreciate everybody rocking with me. Hope y'all enjoy this weekend. Make sure you tune into these games, because I assure you they're going to be some great matchups. And look, we'll do it all over again next week. I'll probably try to jump on ahead of the men's and the women's national championship, because I know that they'll be right around the corner. I know the guys will be on, the women's will probably be on Sunday, and I know the guys' national championship game will be on Monday. So I'll probably jump back on just to give you guys some quick predictions and break down the matchups for whoever's going to be playing. So yeah, keep rocking with me, man. Again, all love. Y'all enjoy this weekend. And I can't end this show without saying roll tide. Be blessed. I'm out.